Welcome, everybody, to the one show that takes you out into the frontiers, out into the wilderness of the new world of sales today, with your own personal guide, Will Chris, the Pilgrim, on the 405.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this bright, sunny day in Laguna Beach. There's a lot of things that we've been talking about over the last year and a half on Pilgrim Talks. Lots of people, lots of ideas, good businesses, people who are optimistic. They see lots of possibilities, working strongly to improve the quality of their teams. I'd like to reflect a little bit on that today with Paul Roberts, producer of the show, and talk a little bit about what this whole social media that we call internet radio, what kinds of things that brings to businesses in Orange County and Southern California and around the country, and to talk a little bit about some of the plans that we have for how to integrate this with some other people around the country. So, Paul, welcome to Pilgrim Talks for today.
Thank you so much for letting me come from behind the microphone here today to talk with your community. You know, I think that's the thing that I've learned more than anything else about this medium. It's not like the old world where we have an audience of listeners. We are really developing a community conversation, and I think that's what distinguishes this and all other types of social medium from everything we've ever seen before. We're actually talking with people, not to them.
Yeah, I think that's a very important piece. When people ask me, well, what are we going to talk about? I tell them we're going to talk about whatever is on your mind, whatever is on our mind. If we want to start the conversation early so we are comfortable with it, we can do that. And I generally do that with folks that maybe spend 10, 15 minutes preparing for the show with them, or I might even spend an hour or so in their office. But it's all getting ready for an in-depth conversation about what's in their mind. This is not about reading a PR piece. This
right.
is not about a radio piece to tell people what a company's doing.
It isn't. It's not about. It's not advertising. It's not a traditional medium where I talk and you listen. Yes, there are people that get engaged with the thing that way. There are people that do just listen. But it has the opportunity and the promise and the potential to do more than that. The analogy I use more and more is one I got from you. I was asked to speak at a thing called Socialnomics last weekend. They had like 50 people there, and mostly startup businesses trying to figure out how they can get their message out on a shoestring budget, and so everybody's interested in social media, blogs, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and I was part of that group conversation that they had talking about internet radio. And the analogy I use, which I credit to you, is that in all those mediums, in all social mediums, we are trying to create a campfire where people gather around, share information, share ideas, and tell stories, just like in the old days. It's a place where we can all come together as a community of people interested in some subject.
I was talking to someone today who was telling me how much he enjoyed and appreciated the radio show. He said that, you know, he listens to it regularly on Saturday morning as he's walking down Starbucks.
Great, yeah. And that's what's unique about it, because in the old days, if you missed a program on radio or television, you couldn't TiVo it. You couldn't listen to it later. Now with the internet as the backbone for all of these new mediums, of course it gets recorded. Of course it gets stored, and it gets archived. And that opens up interesting possibilities. People looking for ideas on some subject not only stumble upon you, the host, as a place where those stories and subjects get gathered, but in particular the shows and the hosts, and I mean the shows and the guests, the people that you have on, they all get archived and listed. So I had somebody, this is a phenomenal story, it was a guy named Jake Villarreal, who was on one of our programs, and I happened to know him outside of this medium. He does basically executive search. He's a headhunter for internet technology, tech geeks, developers, web designers, things like that. If you've got some startup, he helps you find the talent to do all this technical stuff. And he was on one of our shows, and he said, I couldn't believe it. About 3 months after he was on, he got an email from somebody in India who had heard the show and wanted to find out more about his service. Now, how in the world somebody in India did this? I can only imagine it was either passed on from one person to another, or it was posted on some community site, or probably it was a keyword that was attached to that interview when it was posted on the internet as a traditional podcast later. But it is amazing how these things live on and find an audience well after the words have evaporated into the Ethernet here.
Well, I think that's certainly important, that once we record it and post it, it stays there, and it can draw a lot of attention. I think another thing that's important is to note that this is a way of getting a conversation going.
Yes.
With somebody that we don't know at all.
And isn't that powerful? I'm going to let you talk about that, because you've had some phenomenal experiences. You know, obviously you're a sales trainer. You're looking for a new business. That is one of the reasons we all get engaged in these things, so that we hope we can find opportunities or we can help people. And I know that this, for you, has opened up a lot of doors that have led to actual new clients and stuff. I don't know if we're supposed to talk about that or not, but it does have it
well,
is a powerful side benefit.
Well, I mean, to me, what it does, you know, and I don't hope. It's not a matter of hoping. It's a matter of before somebody's going to invite me in to work with their sales team or their management team or their customer service team, before they do that, they have to trust me.
Yes, well, that's true.
And maybe they even have to like me a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to trust that what I'm going to do is not going to embarrass them.
Mm-hmm.
They have to trust that what I'm going to do is not going to put them down. They got to trust that I'm going to be truthful with them. And I think all of that trust building, you know, with most of the people that are on the show here, if they're brand new, I spend at least 5 hours with them over the course of the whole project. I
mm-hmm.
mean, a couple hours,
sure.
You know, an hour in the beginning talking about it, and sometimes that goes for an hour and a half. It's 30 minutes to an hour on the show, and then I follow it up with an hour, maybe an hour and a half afterward. That's a lot of time. When it's all focused on the guests, so
yes.
I'm hearing a lot about them, and they get to see a little bit about how I work. I mean, you know, can talk about it that way, but I think the real sense of it is building a relationship.
It certainly allows people to get to know you more than a face on an ad, more than a verbiage that you write on your website. They get some insight into you. They feel like they have some idea of how you think. I always say what you know and who you know. This is a great medium to demonstrate what you know and who you know. And it's also a great medium to start conversations, as you said. If you want to meet somebody and you call them up and say, in this busy world, hey, I want to take you to lunch, tell you about my service, forget it. I want to send you my newsletter, forget it. Why don't you come to my seminar, you know, maybe. But how about coming on and talking on my radio show? Really, what's the catch? No catch. I'm just trying to meet more people, gather more information, so that I can share these collective ideas and wisdom with my community, with my customers, with my clients. And we'd like you to come and participate in that. Who turned that down? They got an instant chance to come and tap into your whole network. And then in the process, you get to know them, they get to know you, and maybe they join your community, maybe they don't. If nothing else, you've gathered some information from them, which you can pass on. You've also met somebody else who might refer you to somebody. And in true social media fashion, you've recorded this interview, which they can then post on their website and send to everybody they know. You've opened up their Rolodex. You've now tapped into everybody they know, and their community can become part of your community. And that's the power of this medium.
Well, I think the power is in getting a conversation going.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that the internet is a series of conversations. It really is people wandering around with questions or comments, and they're looking for conversations.
Yes.
Now, I think, at some point there was this post our website, and what it really is a, an electronic brochure sitting up there.
Right, right.
It's like a billboard. But when the internet was started, what it meant was I can reach over and grab a file on somebody else's computer.
Yeah, I always say that Web 1.0, the first version of the internet, was allowed you to connect to information. You had a giant library, the world's largest library at your fingertips. If you wanted to find out a fact or a bit of information or a yellow page directory, somebody was doing something, you could tap into it. And as you said, you could reach into their website or whatever and pull out files and information. Web 2.0, the second version of it that we tend to call social media now, is about connecting you to people. Whole different purpose. You can now talk directly to your customers. You can now talk directly to people months before they're ready to buy something and they're just sniffing around. You can talk to people who are in the same field as you are to find a way to network with them and share ideas and information. You can connect a community of people who never actually meet but somehow get to know each other and help each other in this virtual world.
Well, I think that whole notion of information now has become so ubiquitous. It hasn't become as much a part of me as maybe my language is, but it's becoming that. With an iPad or an iPhone or sitting in front of a computer, if I have a question, I no longer think who can answer that
right.
for me. Sometimes I get confused and I fail to get onto Google, but just putting the question as succinctly as I can into Google 90% of the time brings up answers.
Yeah, right. And if it doesn't bring up an answer, it'll bring up an expert or a communal site or a portal that can lead you to the answers. It's a giant breadcrumb. It can take you lots of different places here, and that is the idea of the web, these interconnected strands that somehow run through all our lives here. I'm really fascinated, though, with what you're talking about, the idea of, I know your show is primarily about sales and sales techniques and technologies. You had a discussion on a couple shows ago that I thought was very interesting, really got me thinking. I've forgotten his name, but he was a well-known expert on social media in general. And maybe it was the Sales Lead Management Association show. And they were talking about the difficulty they're having monetizing, monitoring, measuring social media conversations. We've got these conversations going on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. We hope we're stimulating and starting conversations here on this medium. How do you take all those conversations and drop them into your contact manager? How do you drop them into your CRM system? How do you turn them into data that you can then pass on to others to either help them out or demonstrate your authority in this area, whatever it is? And I thought that was really interesting how he was saying that they're starting to add them to CRM systems, but they're not really sure. It's not like a lead that comes in off your website where somebody says, tell me about your widget, and you immediately put them into some sales process. If somebody contacts you on Twitter and is just sort of sniffing around, or you talk to somebody at a LinkedIn group, what do you do with that? How do you track that, monitor it, put it into your sales pipeline?
Well, I think that's the whole role of lead nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we had 10, 15 years ago is we had salespeople. Now, talking about the cutting edge, I think
right.
maybe the majority of companies are still using this model. And the model I'm talking about is that sales means you have a person or a group of people who have responsibility for going out and finding leads.
Yes, right.
They do this, through networking. They do it through getting referrals. They may do it through cold calling.
Mm-hmm. Or ads or traditional things, or just trying to generate calls.
Well, if you begin to use ads, you're starting to get into marketing.
Okay.
And I'll talk about that in a second. But the, you know, their job was to come up with leads.
Right.
And then they took them through a selling process. Sandler is as good a selling process as any.
Right.
There are a number of them out there. Lots of them are good. And they take them through a sales process. Now, a professional salesperson can take a qualified lead through a sales process in very efficiently and in a reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. For different sales, it's different periods of time.
So right? You start by qualifying the lead, the classic things, and then you find out what their needs are, and then you try and figure out how your product can solve those needs for them, and you know, et cetera, et cetera.
The Sandler method is, you know, you build a relationship. You tell them what this is not going to be. I'm not presenting to you. This is not a matter where I'm going to try to convince you of something, which fits right in with our current marketplace.
Yeah, people don't want to be hit over the head, right?
The real issue is I'm going to try to find out from you. You're going to tell me what your significant issues are, whether it's painful for you or whether it's a gain that you're looking for. Then we're going to spend a little time talking about the impact and find out about, you know, how important is this that it gets fixed.
Right.
Find out what your budget is in terms of time, money, and resources, and then find out how you make a decision. And only then, after that, do we begin to think about, talk about how we can solve that problem. But that's a sales process.
Right.
And we have some professional salespeople, lots of them, who use those systems very, very well. Now, if a company could have those professional salespeople spending 100% of their time doing that, they would maximize the value of that salesperson.
But who gets the leads then? That's the salesman's job, I thought, is to go out and cold call and network and get his business card in everybody's hand, wear the button, you know, like the old Herbalife people, and constantly be trying to attract potential customers.
And that's what we're finding out, is that the task of generating qualified leads is a different skill set from the salesperson following a sales process, system. And it's very rare to find one person who has both sets of those skill sets. Because today, people are not picking up the phone calling looking for information from a salesperson.
No.
They're getting that information from all over the internet. Maybe they're getting it from talking to other people on the internet in forums. The last thing they want to do is have a salesperson catch them looking for information and then zip in and start trying to sell them.
It's interesting you say that. I think of two things. One is another conversation that I've heard you have. I think this, again, was on the Sales Lead Management Association, the other show that you host here for the Sales Lead Management Association. And the gist of it was that people today have the ability to go out and do their own research. In the old days, you went to a store and you picked a salesman's brain. And he, of course, is trying to sell you something. You're just trying to understand the world of computers and what's a hard drive and what's RAM and what all the... You're trying to get some knowledge base so that when you do go out and shop, you don't look like an idiot. Today, that's done on the internet.
The salesperson thought that their job was to give you information.
Right. So they're just waiting for people to walk in. You ask, they tell you, and then maybe somewhere down the road they come back and have a serious conversation about buying it. And I know as somebody who's worked with sales professionals before on the marketing and the public relations and marketing side, they hate that. The guys in the showrooms, the guys at the home shows, the guys at the trade shows, they hate those just looky-loos that are just trying to gather information. They'd rather not spend time just going through, let me teach you everything there is about this industry. Let me teach you about computers, what you need to know, what the differences are between the different models and stuff here. Now that information is gathered through the internet. The customer has an easy way. Nobody's trying to sell them anything. They can go out and learn at their own speed and do their own research. And that brings up the second conversation, second point I wanted to make is that I think social media has extended the sales cycle. You now can come in contact with these people who are just sniffing around, who are just trying to gather information at a much earlier point in the process, and you can do one of two things. You can either answer them back on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and all this stuff, answer their questions, send them some information, give them some free stuff to download, audio files, video files, white papers, etc., and then forget about them and hope that they remember you 6 months from now or a year from now when they're ready to buy that product. Or you can continue the conversation throughout that process so that by the time they are ready to purchase, they've already decided, they've already picked you.
Well, I think that the reality is that that is not the salesperson's job to keep that conversation going.
Right.
That is a different set of skills. That keeping that conversation going, lots of people call nurturing, mm-hmm. keeping that conversation going, sending out appropriate information that's going to help people think through the issues. It's more than just information.
Right.
It really helps them to evaluate what's happening, what's going on in the rest of the marketplace, what these issues that they have are really costing them, what possible solutions are there out there, and helping that person who's going to become a customer.
Yeah.
Because we know that a tremendous number, a high percentage of the people who are looking will become customers of somebody within 12 months.
Yes, right.
And so it's really keeping them, helping them. It's not so much as an educational program. It's a stimulation program. And that's a different set of skills. Now, if we can help companies find people who will take the responsibility for generating those qualified leads, and that's a task at such a rate, in such a number that it fills up 100% of the salesperson's time in that selling process, then we've maximized the value of that selling person. The salesperson in terms of generating revenue for the company.
They're selling and not searching.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's a very different set of skills.
I think the underlying problem with the internet today, with social media today, and that is that it requires a different set of skills to start and carry on these conversations. It requires a commitment to carry on these conversations. And it requires somebody to do it. And that's what I see missing in most companies. Today, social media is, for most companies, particularly small to mid-sized companies, is nobody's job, and therefore nothing gets done. Nobody has the authority, training, and expertise to set these things up and to maintain them. You might go hire somebody to design it and build your website and create your Facebook page and all the other stuff, and then whose job is it to tweet? Whose job is it to post? It's the secretary. It's Joe. It's somebody else taking on an added role or an added responsibility for which they're not compensated, but they had some interest and they're willing to jump in and do it. And therefore, you get this kind of half-assed approach to the whole thing.
Well, absolutely. And a professional is going to be compensated for generating the right number and the right quality of leads on a regular basis. And those are skills that can be developed, and they're skills that people have. It seems to me that very often that's going to be outsourced for a while as mm-hmm. people have to develop that expertise. But the real issue is, how are we generating qualified leads for the salespeople so that their job is to disqualify those leads as they move into the process? And of course, when they get disqualified, they go back into the nurturing process.
There are some people now in major corporations who have titles like social media manager, and it is their job to not only develop those channels, but to figure out what to do with them. What are we trying? Are we just nurturing potential future prospects? Are we using them as a sounding board for pissed off customers? Are we using them for a way to test new ideas? There's a variety of things ideas out there that you can do with this communication once you establish it. But it's really funding it and sticking with it even though it doesn't seem to have a discernible, those three ugly letters, ROI. How do you get around that ROI question?
Well, I think the return on the investment is right there at the point where you have, you're generating qualified leads. Now, a qualified lead, a sales accepted lead, means that the salesperson has defined what they want, what they're looking for. Now, it's obvious that salespeople can be, you know, go to the extreme and say, I want somebody who's got their pen poised, ready to write the check. That's not that extreme. It's, but get clear about who you want. And it's not 20,000 people out there that I want. It's a few. There is a discernible number that the salesperson needs, a discernible number of those qualified leads that a salesperson needs to come into his or her funnel every month.
Right.
And it's the job of the I'm going to use this word marketer, because that's the department that does it, to fill that need.
Right.
And that marketer can be rewarded, even compensated, based upon his or her ability to generate that quality of lead, that quantity of lead, at that point in time.
You had somebody on one of your shows that said, if you have a director of sales and marketing, you really have neither.
Well, at the same time, if you don't have alignment with the sales and marketing departments, you're burning up a lot of cash, you're burning up a lot of resources and a lot of time, because they have to be related to each other. They have to be in alignment.
I was startled once. I went into a company that manufactured hot tubs. I used to do a lot of work in the hot tub industry when it was hot. It's cooled off dramatically in the last few years. But when it was hot, a lot of it's here in Southern California, and I did a lot of public relations and marketing work with a lot of the major manufacturers. And I went into them once, and I was walking through this big factory in the executive offices, and I saw these stack of boxes. I said, what are those? Oh, those are our warranty cards. Really? Oh, yeah, we put out a little card with every hot tub, and we ask people to fill it out. In fact, we even incentivize them. We give them a little test kit or something if they send it in. I said, what do you do with these millions of stacks of cards? They said, we put them in the back room here. You know, they didn't even put them into a CRM system, much less really. They knew the idea somehow that they wanted people to know who bought the hot tub and to register for the warranty period, when the warranty started. But beyond that, they really had no idea what to do with these things. And I thought, how sad. They have an opportunity. People reached out to them to say, here I am, I bought your product. And that could be a giant test market. That could teach you a lot about who you are selling to, as opposed to who you think you're selling to. Lots of information laying there, but because nobody took the time or talent to time or effort or money to turn that into something useful. I think that's the same thing with social media. There's the same kind of conversations. They're sending in these cards all the time to you, and most people are just ignoring them and stacking them in the back room.
Well, I think what you're doing is you're talking about that opportunity after the prospect becomes a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to spend a little time talking about that other piece that I think is missing, that we often expect salespeople to do in their spare time.
Right.
But before we do that, let's hear from some of our friends at Sandler Training.
Okay, here we go.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Never ask for the order. Make the prospect give up. Always ask for the order is the salesperson's 11th commandment. You know, the one that just dropped right off the tablets. Never ask for the order goes completely against traditional selling methods. If you don't ask for the order, how will you ever know when the customer is going to buy? Well, think about it. The only person who can really ask for the order is the prospect. Find the prospect's emotional needs first. Provide the answers to meet these needs, and you'll discover that the prospect will give up and ask you for the order. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
And we're back. You know, as I listen to that, I'm thinking to myself, that's so counterintuitive. We've all been taught to ask for the order immediately and often. And, of course, under your Sandler process, you try and switch some of those things around. And what struck me was maybe we should also do another spot that says never ask for the lead, because that's what you're talking about here. Don't have the salesman go out and ask for leads. Have somebody else go out and search for these things, or have the customer come and give them to you because you're willing to communicate with them and give them something back in return.
Well, I think that's the whole point, is that you're creating a space for people to – you know, a space that's not threatening, where people can have conversations, and they're not going to be, nobody's going to be, you know, Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross,
yeah.
ABC, right. Always be closing.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, this is a time for us to sort these things out. Let's take a look. Let's share with you information. Let's get some information from you. Let's begin the conversation here, and let's take that conversation down the road and see where it goes.
You know, that's an interesting point.
And it will go someplace.
What if you did have sort of a call-in center where people could call in and ask questions and get information, get ideas, and it's that. It's an ombudsman, and they're compensated by how happy you are with the result. You know, maybe you survey them later and say, did they answer your questions? Did they give you all the information and that kind of stuff, rather than trying to close you.
Let's go the other direction.
Okay.
I mean, we've spent the first half hour talking about this this place of generating leads from this huge cloud of people who are looking for conversations.
Right.
Many of whom are looking for conversations that involve a particular company.
They want more than information. They can go on the web and get the facts and the figures and the statistics. They can get the features and benefit. They can get the power. They can get the number of doors and all the other things that come with this.
Right. Yeah. And what we're looking for is I think they're looking for a conversation more than just information.
Okay.
I think they're looking for a conversation, but it's a conversation that's not going to make them feel uncomfortable because somebody is approaching them, talking in ways that they don't understand.
Too pushy, too fast, too complex, right?
Yeah, somebody who's compensated for how many times they close this week, this month, this quarter.
I'll give you an interesting example, then. This comes to my mind. Many years ago, I moved into this area in South Orange County, and there's a trail. There's a canyon behind us. So my wife and I thought, let's get a mountain bike. That'll be fun, and that'll be good exercise in our 50s here. So we went down to the local bike shop, and here's a bunch of kids in their 20s all talking about gears and 100-mile rides and all this stuff. And we quickly felt so uncomfortable in that environment. We wanted to talk about this new world. We wanted somebody to, okay, how do you get started, and what do you need, and what do you do, and where do you go? And instead, they made us feel like outsiders. And so we left and ended up going just, I think, to Costco or something and buying just a bike. So they missed an opportunity to engage us and to bring us in, to invite us into their campfire. We walked up to their campfire, and they made us feel uncomfortable.
That's correct. That's correct. They said, oh, you got the wrong clothes on. You got the wrong ideas.
Right. We look too old. Yeah.
You know, and those are some of the things we learn about these conversations. All right. Now, at some point, if you were in that conversation with the people in the bike shop and they really treated you as people they wanted to talk to, at some point you would have held up your hand and said, how much does it cost? How do I get it? I'm looking for a bike.
Right.
Let's talk about that. And you would have self-declared, I am a customer.
Right.
At that point, a salesperson has
could
a job.
Could step in.
Now,
right,
it's not
yeah.
to close them immediately, but it's to carry them through a process of selling and helping to identify why you want to buy this.
Yeah, and here's good, better, best. Yeah, all that stuff. Here's what you get for so much, and a little bit better if you spend this, and then you get into this. There's three or four categories of products. That's what
And that's well after you feel comfortable being in the conversation.
Right.
All right, but now let's look at the other side. At the end, it's the salesperson's job to close. And
right.
to me, that means to get a decision. Be able to close the file, and the decision may well be no.
Right.
In which case, they go back into the nurturing of the conversation place.
Right.
If it's a yes, it's very clear what's going to happen. There's some sort of onboarding. There's some sort of delivering, some sort of actual fulfillment of the promise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a service or it's a product, but there's something that happens there. Now, there's a whole nother piece of the relationship that we either have forgotten or we expect that the salesperson in their spare time would pursue. And that's customer management. Now, I'm not talking about problem solving. I'm not talking about, hey, I got a real problem. I need some help here. That's important. But the larger piece is, how do we stay in touch? How do we keep the conversation going with our customers?
Exactly. Again, I'll give you another story here. I'm a big storyteller. I grew up in the car business. My father was an executive for Chrysler Corporation. So I grew up fascinated by and hearing lots of stories. Everybody in our neighborhood, their father worked for some car company or a subcontractor. And one of the stories that I heard several years ago and have seen firsthand, because I have a couple friends who participated in this, are how some brands of cars, like Jeep, I'll use Jeep as a good example, it's a lifestyle. It becomes more than a product. And if you're into the Jeep off-road lifestyle, they will actually have Jeep safaris, and they will organize these outings and these get-togethers and these rallies. And suddenly they bring you into this world of adventure and outdoor living that their product allows you to participate in. And by doing that, they create customer loyalty, and people buy Jeeps over and over and over again in an industry where one out of five, I think, will buy the same product again. You know, people are very fickle. They don't just stick with, like when I was a kid, my grandfather was a Ford man. That's all he'd buy, you know, was a Ford, and he had 20 of them or something. That sort of customer loyalty is gone, and companies have just accepted that. And there are a few brands that are resisting it and seem to want to say, no, how can we cultivate it? How can we develop it? We've got to find a way to keep you in the conversation, to keep you coming to our campfire and hanging out with us and having a good time here.
Well, I think you have to have a different campfire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about the campfire that you have, the conversations you have with people who are just coming into the conversation, or
right,
who've decided no, and no never means never. No means not no right now.
Yes, right.
And so if they're looking, they're going to be buying someplace in the next year if they're actually looking around for it. So they go back into the conversation and they do some more, you know, looking around, some more talking. Now, at the other side of the sales process, there's this gold mine of people who are there who are in a conversation or potentially in a conversation, and that's where account management is so important. But what we often do is we say to the salespeople, oh, see if you can sell them some more in your spare time.
Right.
Now, generally, the upsell is not as big a return for the salesperson as the first sale. And that means that they're not going to be spending their time doing that. And it's also another set of skills.
Hmm.
And so we have this very large group over here who, like you said, are no longer drawn in by the brand itself.
Right.
They're
immune to some of that.
The conversation that goes on.
Everybody still dreams of brand. That's the hot buzzword. Every product wants to be a brand. And the idea is that there's something else, some other emotion. That's my definition for it. There's an emotion attached to it that adds extra value and extra reason to buy it. You don't buy Apple just because it's a good product. You buy it because somehow you're part of that community. It shows that you're cool, you're cutting edge or something. Somehow you buy a Harley because it says something about you. You know, you're still born to be wild and a rebel at 55 or something here.
Well, that's the external part of it.
Right.
And our friend Ryan Rikus, who has a radio show on OC Talk Radio, he's a good friend of mine. He will tell you the brand is the sum total of the experience that you have with that company and its services or products.
Right.
So what I'm suggesting is that brand experience goes on after I buy it.
And it starts way
conversation continues.
And it starts way before you buy it, then through social media.
That's the conversation. That's how we get into the conversation. But, and the selling process is really helping people to come to a decision. Do I want to buy this product or service? And the salesperson's job is not to force them. It's not to arm wrestle them. It's to help them come to the best possible decision that they can, given the issues that they're struggling with or the goals that they have, given the budget of time, resources, and money, and given how they make decisions. The salesperson is there to help that person get closure on that opportunity to make a decision.
That so-called consultative sales process that seems to be in vogue for the last few years. I'm not here to try and close you in 5 minutes. I'm here to get to know you, to understand your budget, your problems, your needs, and I'll be the consultant that will help you find the best product to match all those things for you.
Well, that's true, and I may not have that product, so I may have to tell you no.
Yeah.
In my best judgment, this is not a product for you right now.
Now, what I'm left with then is this awful feeling that there are now three parts to the sales process: the sniffing around, conversation, come in and sit by the campfire, and let me help you learn about this new world that you're entering, the bike store, whatever it is. And then there is the traditional salesman who's there to help you figure out the best option for your budget and your needs. And then there's somebody else who keeps you involved in the brand in some way, shape, or form afterwards and keeps you a loyal brand advocate, as they say, that involves you in their story. I've only seen a salesman in most companies. Who is this first person that builds the campfire and invites people to sit down and talk and share stories? And who is this person that organizes the fun around the brand and helps me live the lifestyle? Who are those other two people? Where do I find them? What do I call them? What do I pay them?
All right. Well, what we have is the salesperson can only handle so many opportunities at a time.
Right.
That's why, you know, when you say we're looking for 20 qualified sales accepted leads a month per salesperson, or 20 per week, or whatever the right flow is for them, they can only handle that many. Now, on the other hand, that conversation, given the electronic and digital formats that we use, with email, with telephones, with
conferences, web conferences, everything. Yeah,
audio, video, all of that. That can be a very large group of people.
Yeah, you can manage a pretty big group of camp goers here at your campfire. One person can be in conversation with quite a few people through all the
meetings that we have. And with the automated marketing programs that are there right now, and a little bit of practice and a little bit of mentoring from some of the professionals out there who know how to do it, you can have a large number of people who are in the process of being nurtured until it's appropriate for them to be presented to a salesperson or have a salesperson present to them.
Right.
To go through the process of deciding, of helping that prospect decide whether or not they want to buy now. And then following that, you go back to this large number of people. And it's a similar program of keeping people in touch. And you're not going to be calling them as often as the salesperson, but you can use a variety of techniques and tools to stay in touch with them. And it's not just stay in touch, to keep the conversation going.
Yes, yes.
Now, there's opportunities there for upselling, for cross-selling. There's opportunities for selling, service contracts, opportunities for training. And today, that's exactly where people are looking to generate, to reduce the cost of what they're doing is one of the people I interviewed on the show from USCAD, I mean, their whole point was we can help people reduce the cost of using their CAD/CAM software through training.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we have to do is help people understand that the cost of training is going to be repaid by their reduction in the time that's spent with this. So, you know, staying in touch with them for training, for upselling, cross-selling, renewing the contract, all of those things are gold mines.
I'm thinking of one of the other conversations I heard on, it was actually on Josh's show, another host here at OC Talk Radio who you know, and he was talking with somebody that has a training school, I think it was like a computer training school, or maybe it was him talking about his own sales training, but whatever it was, he was saying how many companies have cut back on training, and one of the reasons they cut back on training, not just because they're tightening the belt, but because in a world where people don't stay with you very long and they jump from company to company and all over the place, more and more companies are starting to say, I'm not going to train this guy because all he's going to do is take that training and go get a better job somewhere else.
Well, that's always been that's always been true with people in terms of investing in training. Yes, that's certainly a problem, but now let's see what the problem is if we don't train
people. Yeah, then you have a bunch of idiots. I'm going to keep my people dumb and stupid so they'll stay with me here. Yeah.
That's right. So, I mean, it really does. You really have to take a look at the return on the investment that you're getting in any sort of training like that. Likewise, with companies like Apple, I mean, I recently, bought an iPad, and then I bought a MacBook Air, and what did they sell me after I bought the hardware or along the way? What did they sell me? They sold me AppleCare, which is the support system that's going to last. How long will that keep the conversation going? 3 years.
Yeah, right.
They sold me One-to-One, which is a way of training me. And what are they going to do when I come in for that training? They're going to keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
And there'll be opportunities there for me to buy other software, to use other tools that they have. But it's that conversation that's there. And every company right now, I think, really needs to have those three processes very clearly worked out and have people who, as best as possible, are experts in each of those three. Now, I can train people in sales. I can train people in how to manage salespeople. I can train people in customer service on the other end. But a company has to have a way of generating those leads without involving the salespeople, because that's when you begin to lose efficiency tremendously.
You know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing a book in this. I'm hearing a new sales seminar for you to go around and teach and sell, similar to what happened in the 60s and 70s. I started my professional life in the 70s after high school and college. And I remember taking a job, came to California in 1980. I'm broke. I wanted to be an actor, writer, rock star, something. Instead, I ended up selling copiers. And it was very interesting to me. I mean, I hated it, but it was very valuable what I learned out of it, which is the basic standard, I guess what they used to call it, the Xerox sales school or the IBM sales approach, the five steps to, you qualify them and then you, I forgot what the steps are now, but you qualify them and then you talk about features and benefits and you close them. You're supposed to try and close them three times. And, it was a very simple sales system that was created sometime in the late 60s or 70s by IBM and Xerox and used by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking to myself, it's time for a revision to that. It's time for something beyond just the sales school, whatever those, the sales process. It almost seems like you have to have somebody going out and teaching the conversation nurturing process and then the continuing education, the continuing conversation that keeps them enthusiastic and involved with your brand so they'll come back and buy again and again. Those are two. I don't know anybody doing those things.
Well, they're being done in three different ways right now. I mean, the sales process itself is still the sales process. I mean, what Xerox did, what IBM did, what David Sandler did, these folks were giants in their field.
Yes.
Because they helped that process of selling. And what they had going for them is, in order for anybody to learn about how to solve their problems, they had to call a salesperson.
Yes. It turned it into a profession and not just a trade that you used to just tag along with the sales guy and you'd try and pick up tips and you'd see what he did and you'd try and learn by hit or miss.
Yeah.
And that was,
you were an apprentice. And most of that was, was just do it my way, and nobody can do it your way.
Yes,
absolutely. What I have to do is I have to learn how to do it my way, but I can use a system or a template to do that. So there are some very good systems out there that can be used over and over every time. And Sandler's system is a very good one, and that's why I use it, because it works, and it's honest. All right, but nevertheless, it is for the selling process.
When did David Sandler do all this? Was this the 50s or 60s or 70s? I don't know.
60s, late 60s. Mm-hmm. Late 60s. It's been around 40, 45 years.
And what was his claim to fame? How did he turn? How did he become a salesman, and how did he learn to turn this into a
failure.
System?
He was a failure as a salesperson.
He didn't go to college,
and he lost to the company that his dad had. He lost it to some relatives by a proxy battle, and he had to go out on his own and sell. And he wound up trying to do that and failing miserably. And he was a very bright guy, and so between you and me, he came to California.
Mm. And land of opportunity.
Drove around, visited Esalen, he visited Marin County, he got involved with NLP, mm-hmm. he learned about transactional analysis, he learned a number of things about how human beings work.
Right.
And then he took what he learned here and went back to the East Coast, to Baltimore, and began to shape that in ways that folks on the East Coast could use that as a system.
Fascinating.
Well, and literally, he had a transactional analysis psychologist who worked with him every week, and they would take specific sales calls that he was in, and they would debrief them.
Hmm, wow.
The doctor's name, the psychiatrist's name was Al Lucco, but that's what he did, and that's the basis of a lot of the, not only the Sandler system, but a lot of the development that came allied with the Sandler system, and people leaving the Sandler system and creating their own systems, things like that, mm-hmm. they're based on human development.
Yes, right.
All right? So now it's not just features and benefits, isn't this nice, you ought to have it, or tricks to get you to sign.
Yeah, lots of tricks.
It's really
right.
based on human development and how to help people feel okay in the process.
It's interesting because that's also what fueled in the 60s. I'm a student of, if you watch shows like Mad Men and stuff, advertising came of age in the 60s, and public relations came of age in the 60s and more into the 70s, where it stopped being just tricks and mm-hmm. started to be, let's understand in advertising what colors, what images do, what messages do. Let's go more to the emotion of the consumer, and let's try and answer that and fulfill that need more than just, if you look at ads from the 40s or 50s, it is just features and benefits. We've got we're the fastest car on the market, buy us or something here.
We're the best snake oil in the world.
Yes, right. And right, so that now, period of the 60s and 70s, they created a lot of these systems. They started to understand human psychology and applied that to advertising, public relations, right. sales, all those types
right.
of things.
But all of that was mass marketing.
Right.
And what we have now is one-to-one. That was that whole thing with Peppers and Rogers about one-to-one marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, along with the Internet, that became possible. These conversations can be one-to-one conversations.
Yes.
And now we can track what people are actually looking at and doing on our website or other websites, and that, and if we use that to manipulate, that's a whole different thing. But if we use that to deepen the conversation, then that's what we're talking about here, is finding out what people are really wanting to do, what they're really interested in, and supplying them with those pieces. And that's where, you go back to the selling process. There's a very good selling process, and I don't see that changing dramatically because of the Internet.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think we've learned, and we still continue to refine what makes people buy something.
Yeah.
How
now,
do
I'm not
they
talking about B2C as much as I'm talking about B2B.
Right.
We're talking about business to business. The selling process still goes through the same kinds of issues that we've had before. But what we have now is people do not have to come to a salesperson to find the information.
No, they come pre-armed. They come more educated than they ever have because they've gone on the internet and done the research.
And if we're careful, they're better able to make decisions.
When I was in the hot tub industry, there was an ongoing debate. Is the internet the good thing or a bad thing? There were people selling hot tubs on the internet, on internet sites. You can go today and just log in and buy a hot tub. Give them your credit card and they'll ship it to you. There are still traditional standalone dealers, one of the few industries like the bike industry that has standalone dealers that just sell hot tubs. And the argument was this. If you talk to somebody who was an online retailer, he would say, hey, all I'm doing is educating the consumer and he's going to the local store and buying it. In return, the local retailer is saying, no, that's not what's happening. He's going on and getting all the information and lower pricing, and then he's coming into my store and beating me up, and I have to match somebody who's selling him out of a warehouse in Nebraska or something here. The whole point is that it somehow has changed the internet in ways that neither side could agree on or understand, has changed the way consumers are buying stuff. Maybe
that's
not
right.
The process, but the way they're buying them.
That's right. And our real resource as a company, our real resource is that whole group of people out there who are interested in having a conversation with us and with our solutions about their problems. They're interested in having that conversation. And part of it, it's learning. Part of it's also helping them to understand their problem better.
Right.
All right. Now, then we have the selling process itself. And then after that, we have a continuing conversation that we can have if we choose to mine that gold mine that's there.
Right.
And both of those ends do not fit into what we expect salespeople to be very, very good at. And salespeople are a place, one of the strongest places for bringing revenue into the company. The secondary place is over here in that account management after the first sale. But that only happens if you have a system for doing that. It's not going to happen effectively and efficiently if you're expecting salespeople to take time away from their most valuable processes to do account management.
Well, I would love to carry on this conversation, but I realize that we do have another show. I'd forgotten we do have another show this afternoon here, and they're anxiously trying to bug me to wrap this one up here.
All right.
I think you're onto something, and I think you should think about it and explore it some more, because I think that in the 60s and 70s, they came up with some very good selling systems, like Sandler. But I don't know that anybody's come up with a conversation nurturing system like we're talking about through social media, and I don't know that anybody's come up with a continuing education keeping the customer. It's more than customer service. It's somehow keeping them a part of your community so that when they come back and ready to buy. I think those are the two parts that we should talk some more about someday, because I think that's
okay. Well, wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, we can clip off the back end of this conversation here.
All right. Well, as always, I appreciate your thoughts on this. It's always fun brainstorming with you here, and I hope that others will add to this conversation and come back and give us some comments on what we're talking about, because we're really talking about an evolution of the sales cycle, where it's gotten much longer, much deeper, and into a more conversational mode than it's ever been before.
Good.
All right. Till next week.
All right.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405.